Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Subdued. I'm okay.
Yeah.
A little subdued. You know, I will talk for a moment about the family vacay for
sure.
The weekend. You know, sometimes I really did learn about expectations,
uh-huh.
You know, and how important it is for people when you have an expectation of something to talk about it in advance.
Yes.
And I know I coach people about this all the time, but it's amazing to me how families will regress into roles and responsibilities of as if adult children are still 5 or 10.
100%. You like, yeah, it's so weird. You morph back into that role.
Yeah.
It's frightening. Yeah.
And now being sort of the matriarchy, because I don't have, you know, we don't have our generation of parents anymore.
Sure.
It was really interesting. It's like, yeah. Oh, I wonder, did I put my parents through this stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. So I was okay, but I'm sort of like, oh, I think I need a vacation now.
I understand it completely.
And you said that you had sort of a, like,
it was just a
downtime.
Exactly. I had a friend come in with her kids. It was wonderful, but just exhausting. Like, it was nonstop. Like, I feel like I had to sneak my meditation in and be like, I'll be right back for like 20 minutes to breathe. And, you know, I realized how much of a necessity I need that meditation. It's not a luxury for me. It is a necessity for me to recharge and reboot.
And you and I are so much alike, and I think we should do a show on this sometime before down the holidays, because we're such people pleasers.
Yes.
We give so much energy to making sure that other people are happy and content and all that stuff. Sometimes, for me, to the expense of, I don't even know that I'm completely depleted.
Yes.
And then I get resentful.
So that's exactly.
Not fair. It's not fair to somebody else for me to be storing that sort of stuff. So it was an eye-opening
experience.
Plus,
exactly.
The worst part about it, you know that I am a wasp attractor.
No.
Yes. I am like a wasp. I'm like one
of
those.
Talking about the bees, not like
bees,
the English.
Wasps. Yeah, right. No.
Right.
Bees, hornets, all those
wow.
things. So wherever they are, if I'm around, they like to come toward me. So apparently in the mountains, at the tail end of the summer, August and September, has a much higher population of bees, wasps, etc. Well, I don't have an EpiPen on me, or I don't have not really taken care of that. And the last time I got attacked by wasps, turns out I wasn't allergic to wasps.
Okay.
Just bees. But they sting and they never stop. So
oh
we were kept trying
God.
To go to these state beaches, and you'd have to, you know, drive in and you'd see these warning signs. Wasps.
Really?
Everywhere. Extra wasps. So we like could not find a place to just go down to
That's
the
so
beach.
Scary.
It was scary.
Oh my God. I got stung by a wasp when I was 4, but I've never been stung by a bee. Isn't that interesting?
That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I remember it. I was like 4, and I remember like it looked like a bird. So I was like waving at it, and then it stung my hand. Isn't that so weird?
Well, probably the bees don't sting you because they say you're already so sweet as honey. So they're, you know,
exactly.
We don't need to sting you.
Well, I've heard that like certain smells, like mosquitoes, though, that they attack me like nobody's business. I'm going to get Zika or whatever the heck it's called. Because but here on the West Coast, it's not so bad. I feel like on the East Coast, it's so much worse. I don't
feel terrible when I hear these things on the news. We're so blessed out here.
Yes.
We have so few of all of those
craziness.
Terrible things. You think about people in Texas and all over the place. They're just,
yeah.
You know, they're just like walking around, like just like scratching all the time. Okay, so recap last week.
Yes. Oh, I loved our guest. She was fabulous. So we had Mitra Rabar. She's a spiritual leader. And she wrote the book Miraculous Silence. She's also an intuitive. She had such beautiful, loving energy. She just really wants to make the world a better place through just prayer and just compassion, I think, for people. So
yeah, she's very heartfelt. I really liked her.
And after the show, she was telling, you know, Deborah and I things that it was just, she was right on. She was great. So fantastic. I mean, I've been to a ton of mediums and intuitives, and I feel like she might have been the most spot on. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Pretty amazing. So if you missed that show, go back and take a listen.
Yes.
If you'd like to give us a call today, our number is 323-203-0815. And before we introduce our guest for today, we will let you hear from our sponsor.
Are you getting tired of trying to create a positive life with a negative mind? Vantage Point Recovery believes that the potential wholeness and well-being of our clients depends on a systematic approach to developing an authentic and fulfilling life. Specializing in the treatment of individuals struggling with mental health and substance use disorders, we believe that your journey is our journey. Call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be able to create a shift in the thinking of you or a loved one.
Okay, welcome back.
Thank you,
Dr. Deborah and
Therapist Kelly.
And we're so happy that you're listening. Today we have a magnificent guest, and I'll tell a little story about him before I actually give the bio. I met this guy about well over 30 years ago at, of course, a nightclub, right?
So
I was
funny.
Underage with a fake ID. And, of course, how could anybody know that, right? If you're a guy in a bar and you assume that everybody there is of age. But anyway, it was very interesting. So anyway, and then about maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was writing a column in the Toluquan Times, and it was the Dear Dr. Deborah column, and then I was looking, you know, because I like to read it and see the, you know, how did it show up, and I'm like, I know that face. Oh my gosh, I remember that face from so many years ago.
That's
and I think
amazing.
I gave him a call, and Yeah, it was fascinating. So today, without more ado, we have Kevin McKenna, the true Renaissance man for the new millennium. He started his career in elementary school performing in musical theater and on local television. His music has been heard and featured on national and LA radio programs, and Kevin has appeared on television shows such as Good Day LA, Current Affairs, Street Stories, and The Reporters. In addition, his lyrics were quoted and he was featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. He won a Songwriter's Award for Billboard magazine, and two of his songs were used in a feature-length movie starring Academy Award-winning actor Ernest Borgnine. Kevin has written, produced, and directed three feature-length documentaries for theater and television release. He also did the documentary Sundown on Skid Row, and he's here to talk to us largely about homelessness today and many other things from his great career. Welcome, Kevin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on. A little bit about bee stings. I actually teach classes for the World Safety Institute, and one of the subjects is bee stings. And you should always bring your EpiPen.
Yes.
I don't have one. I'm like, I'm
now they're $600.
They just went up. Oh, you must know. They just went up from $100 to $600 for a bundle of EpiPens.
Yeah, how can people afford that?
Oh, especially poor people.
Well,
ridiculous.
You know what? And Sarah Jessica Parker, who was the kind of the face of that EpiPen campaign, she dropped out because she was so angry that they did that to make a kind of a stand. So, yeah.
Well, a little bit about bee stings. There's the honeybee. There's three kinds of honeybees. The queen bee who stings multiple times.
Yeah.
She does that because she has to fight for her position in the hive.
Wow.
There's a drone bee who's a male bee, doesn't have a stinger, and he dies after mating with the queen bee.
Oh.
And then there's the worker bee.
That's
like, you know,
yeah, of course.
Pleasure, and then you die. But then there's the worker bee who lives about 48 days, and this is the one you have to be worried about.
Oh.
They have a stinger with a barb at the end.
Uh-huh.
And when they sting you, they pull out and they take their, they die. But they leave the poison sac stuck in your arm.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just try to grab the
stinger.
Stinger and pull it out. That's totally wrong because you're squeezing the poison into your arm.
So what do you do?
I didn't know that.
What you're going to do is flick it with a
credit card
or something and flick it off so the poison sac isn't busted inside the arm. So a little bit about bee stings.
That is fascinating.
That is really interesting.
I've never known that.
Because I mean, who would leave that in there? You know, it's like instinct to just pull it out.
Right.
Yeah.
No, wait. You said, so a little pleasure and then you die for that poor male drone bee. But do they actually have orgasms, bees?
Well, I don't know that. Actually, bees do it, birds do it. They must have something that
makes exactly.
them go for it.
It must be worth dying for. I don't know.
No, the stinger is dying. Oh, yeah, the drone does die. That's true.
Amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Oh, my. So, yes, you did have such an impressive bio. We shortened it a little bit for today. But tell us some of the other amazing things that you have done that we did not. You said something about being on the cover of the Wall Street Journal. When was that?
That was in 1992, I was involved with the National Hobo Association, and I was doing a concert on Thanksgiving for hobos, and the Wall Street Journal showed up and took my picture and put it on the front page. It was really funny, because the next day, the day that it came out, all these people started calling me up saying, I saw your picture yesterday on the Wall Street Journal.
So incredible.
It was, especially for me.
Tell us your story of how did you get fascinated with the whole world of homelessness? What brought you to that topic?
Well, in the late 90s, I was the executive director of the Burbank Temporary Aid Center, and we dealt a lot with homeless clients. And I saw too much misery in the homeless population. One day, a lady came in with five kids, one still in diapers, living in a Toyota car.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
breaks my heart.
It's terrible. And, you know, what's this person going to do? Her husband's in jail for some drug offense.
Mm-hmm.
And she's left all alone. She can't pay the rent. And she ends up homeless with five kids.
Oh, my God.
Actually, women and children are the largest growing segment of the homeless population.
Wow.
And there's about 25% of the population are women, families. It's women with children.
Unbelievable.
And why do you think that is? What?
A lot of it's due to domestic violence, husbands getting locked up in, you know, for some kind of offense, and, you know, just other things, losing their job, housing is so expensive now. 19% of the homeless are employed, but they
can't
afford with their you know, minimum wage jobs to have a home.
Sure.
So they're living on somebody's couch or sleeping in a shelter or something else.
And then before the show, you were telling us a little bit about homeless veterans. And can you speak a little bit about that, too?
Yeah. One out of every three male homeless is a veteran. I mean, this is terrible.
That's startling.
It really is.
They come back for more. I mean, you got to think about it. These guys are 18, 19-year-old kids that are at the prom one day. They're thrown into boot camp for a few weeks, and then they're off killing people.
Right.
I mean, this can be traumatic. This
sure.
can be really, really traumatic. And then there's so much battle there. Their lives are in danger to constantly. So they get some kind of mental anguish, post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of them actually become drug addicts or alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And the suicide rate among veterans is astronomical compared to the average culture, people in society.
Uh-huh.
It's just unbelievable. So.
Unbelievable.
When I was first starting out and doing an internship with this group of, I had six boys at this group home, and one of the little young boys, I think he was about 10 or 11 years old, and he was such a sweet kid. He was so adorable. His parents had become homeless, so he was put into this group home because he also had a lot of depression and mental illness issues.
Sure.
And he would just sit in my office sometimes and he would just cry, and I would say, what's happening? He goes, my parents don't want me. And I said, I don't think that that's true. They just can't get you back.
Right.
You know, and he was so sad. It was just so, it broke my heart. And then I would start to cry, and he'd say, Dr. Deborah, how am I ever going to be able to talk to you about my problems if you're crying?
Oh my, what a smart kid.
He was so smart. But it was, and it taught me to learn I had to have good boundaries and containment with these things.
Yeah.
But the story was so sad because his parents would come to visit and it would seem like they didn't care about him, but it wasn't true at all. They just were in that rut. They couldn't find a way to, and then of course they had some substance abuse issues because they were so depressed and sad that they couldn't keep their son, and they just didn't have a way out of that torture chamber.
32% of the homeless children have some kind of mental disorder accompanied by impaired functioning. Most of them that are in school actually do very poorly in school. A lot of them repeat grades, and a lot of them drop out.
Wow.
You know, I met that girl. They made a movie about homeless to Harvard. She was an anomaly. You know.
Yes, I feel like it's very rare. Yeah,
very, very rare. It's very rare that these kids get out of homelessness without serious mental disorders.
Wow.
You know, and it's plus that their environment, they're used to seeing drug addiction, the crime, all this stuff on the street. So how's that going to affect them for the rest of their lives?
Exactly.
So stressful. I mean, imagine just like look at one of your children right now. They're babies. Imagine one of them not having a bed to sleep in.
Well, I remember my dad telling me he and my mom were high school sweethearts, and he had a best man at his wedding. He's walking around New York one day, and he sees a homeless person on the street, and he recognizes him, and it's his best man. So it could just happen. Yep.
How many years later?
It was probably about 20 years later, something like that.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah, maybe even more, maybe 30. But still, I mean, I can't imagine. And he was a bright, you know, nice guy. And so it's just like, it's just, it can be, you know, quote unquote, normal, typical people as well who just
Anybody can fall through the cracks. Lose your job. A lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. You lose your job. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, you can't pay the rent. And what happens? You're going to be evicted.
Yes.
Yeah, and that, like the 2008 crash, did you see an increase in homelessness as a result of that?
I think there's a big increase in families. Families is the biggest growing segment of the homeless population. I'm lucky to say veterans have been slowing down. They've been doing more for veterans in the last couple of years.
That's good. Yeah.
Women and children are by far the biggest growing segment of the homeless population.
When if you look around L.A. too, I mean, if you look at people's cars, you can tell a lot of people are living in their cars. You know what I mean? Like, it's really interesting, especially, you know, in Santa Monica, the beach towns, like, you just kind of look around and you can see people are really living out of their cars.
Yeah, the homeless people in L.A. have soared 85%. There's over 9,500 homeless people, according to the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority.
Wow. Unbelievable.
What I was always fascinated by was that, like, for example, in West Los Angeles, there was this one woman, I don't know if you this will be familiar to, I think she was called the Lipstick Lady, because she would stand in front of all of the sort of mirrored glass, and she'd always have all these different colored lipsticks, and she would paint her face while she was staring at her reflection. She was very sweet. Mm-hmm. She had no level of aggression or anything like that. But then the rumor was that she had well over $100,000 in the bank, but actually just chose to be homeless. So I'm curious, do you know about who I'm talking about by chance?
No, I don't.
Do you know anything about people who might choose to be homeless?
That's
a lot of people, a third, like I think I said before, are the mentally ill. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They have serious mental
But that's not
disorders.
Really a choice then. Is there anybody that you know that's conscious, not mentally ill,
well,
that actually chooses?
Well, actually, the hobos used to be that way. Oh. A lot of hobos wanted to be homeless. They liked to travel. Mm-hmm. There's certain hobos. Jack London was a hobo. Mm-hmm. Clark Gable came to the town on the rails. Robert Mitchum rode the rails. So these people actually wanted to. Woody Guthrie, he wanted to be homeless, or he wanted to be a hobo. He didn't want to have that 9-to-5, and a lot of people don't want that 9-to-5.
Right.
You know.
And when I was growing up, there was a show called Hobo Kelly.
Right.
Do you remember that? Yeah, yes, she had these big glasses, and she'd come out with her little knapsack, and she'd sit down, and she would actually glamorizing this idea for young children somehow this was the freedom of life, was to be able to be.
Like,
I didn't even put it together now, but that she was basically saying homelessness was the way to go.
Right.
Right.
But I don't think it's all that glamorous.
They're a little bit different. Hobos, a lot of times, work. They're more just vagabond travelers. Actually, I'm a great-grand-duke of the hobos. I was knighted by the king of the hobos, Roadhog, back in the 1990s.
So interesting. But back to your thought about, do people choose it? There's a wonderful book by Jeanette Walls called The Glass Castle. And she grew up in a family, again, of mental illness, her mom and her dad. But her mom, like, could afford certain things, but chose to be homeless. And she liked the freedom. And she really, I mean, it's just super interesting. I mean, again, it's the question of, was she mentally ill so she couldn't really be realistic? Or did she really, truly didn't want to be, you know, she liked being on the outdoors and just kind of doing her own thing. It's super fascinating.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to tell you a little bit. Hobo, do you know where they get the word hobo?
No.
Hobos, developed after the Civil War when the Southern soldiers came home and they didn't have a home to go to anymore.
Uh-huh.
And they called them hoboys because they put hose on their back and they went out and worked in the fields.
Oh.
And that's how they made their livings while they traveled around.
Wow.
Oh, I had no idea.
So interesting.
You know, there's something, though, like when people think about, I mean, my daughter, actually, when she was, she decided to leave the Academy of Art School, and mm-hmm. she went off with her boyfriend at the time to Hawaii.
Yes.
And they had no home to go to in Hawaii.
Wow.
And they did that for 6 months, basically, camping mm-hmm. and living in different places. But that's such a, like, a sweet young person's thing when you don't have a lot of responsibilities or things that you have to attend to, which would seem extraordinarily different than somebody who has a home and a family, and, you know, they're out of work, and then they can't make ends meet, and then one thing leads to the next, and the next thing you know, they have no resources to support. It's like a downward spiral,
and
how just unbelievably painful that would be.
Oh, plus dangerous.
Dangerous,
right.
Do you know that more than double the number of fatalities are against homeless people than against home people who have homes.
I did not know that.
Really?
You mean more murders and
yeah, more murders and are bias motivated against people without homes. And the FBI does not currently recognize them as being
like citizens.
Well, it's being it doesn't recognize them. There's no crime against hurting homeless people. There's crime against hurting, gay people and black people and et cetera, but nothing against hurting homeless people. And there's a lot of kids, young boys that get, hopped up and they go out and they beat up homeless people, light them on fire.
Oh, my God.
When
this
I was
is
doing the documentary,
horrible.
I interviewed one guy. He had burns all over his leg. He was in a sleeping bag, and these kids came by and poured lighter fluid on him and lit him on fire.
Oh my gosh, so because they wouldn't get prosecuted for anything? There was no...
Well,
a crime.
Well, they could get prosecuted, but feds don't consider it a hate crime.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That is really, really upsetting.
That is really upsetting. Oh my gosh, if anybody has any questions for Kevin McKenna, our guest today, he's talking about homelessness.
Also something that's upsetting. And,
please give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now a word from our sponsor.
Were you diagnosed with a mental health-related disorder and feel stigmatized so much you find yourself unable to reach out for help? At Vantage Point Recovery, we believe that every single human being has unlimited potential that is often unrealized. While a diagnosis offers a starting place to unpack what is blocking our clients from accessing that part of themselves, we do not believe they are their diagnosis. We believe that within every diagnosis lies a seed of hope and opportunity for our clients to realize more of who they really are so they can become who they want to be. Call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be a fit for you or a loved one.
Thank you, Vantage Point Recovery, for sponsoring our show. We are just delighted to have you on board. We are here with Kevin McKenna, and he's talking to us about homelessness. I'm sorry, I rudely interrupted you before you were about to speak.
Oh, that's okay. I was speaking about violence in the homeless population, and something else that's very disturbing. A study found that nearly one-third of the homeless women had been raped, and women with schizophrenia have been reported to be raped 22% times more, with two-thirds of them being raped multiple times.
Unbelievable.
And what's really sad about that and scary is that they're raped a lot of times by drug-addicted males who have AIDS or HIV.
Wow.
So we're spreading the HIV virus. The HIV virus is very high in the homeless population.
Mm.
Two of the people that I had in my documentary died within 6 months of the filming because of AIDS, and one had AIDS at the age 13 years old.
So again, his documentary, Kevin McKenna's documentary, is Sundown on Skid Row. And if people do want to take a look at that, where can they find that documentary?
I haven't put it online yet, but if you get in touch, maybe you can direct them to me. And
sure.
I used to go around to a lot of service clubs and colleges and stuff and show the documentary to enlighten people. It was funny, I went to one service club and I finished playing the documentary, and one of the guys got up and said, "These guys are bums, they don't deserve anything, they're just alcoholics," and he doesn't realize that a third of these alcoholics are have schizophrenia, mental disorders, bipolar, whatever, and they're just treating themselves, they're trying to treat themselves.
Yes.
They're not bums,
They're self-medicating because
and a lot of the homeless population can be back in this society. 60% of schizophrenia can be cured with drugs. So these people are out there. They could be working. They could be off the street. They don't have to be talking to themselves, But we have to find them. We have to, treat them.
So stereotypically, I've always heard people say that people who are homeless tend to live more toward the warmer beach climate-y areas because it's a little more desirable. Is that true? Is that a statement of fact?
California here, San Diego has a huge homeless population. Mm-hmm. Actually, I interviewed a judge down there who became homeless purposely and wrote a book about homeless.
Wow.
I forget the name of the book. I have a copy at home. But he became homeless just to find out, because he had so many homeless people coming into his court. He wanted to find out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So he spent, I think, a week becoming homeless. Robert Coates was his name. And actually, I used to produce some segments for To Tell the Truth, and I had him on as one of our...
Oh, really?
Yes.
And it's so interesting.
But even that, it'd be so different to be homeless for a week versus being really sure. homeless. Like, you still have a choice. Oh, I'm choosing yeah. to be homeless for a week, but you have a place yeah. to go to. I can't even imagine what that would be.
God.
What that would be like.
I want to make sure that we're getting enough time to really talk about kind of what we can do to help, because to me, that's the most important thing. So can you maybe tell us a little bit about how we can help the homeless?
You know, I did a blanket drive for the homeless for 8 years. And I would write an article. You might have seen some in the Tulican Times, and I'd ask for blankets. I got so many blankets, oh. unbelievable. 1 year, that Holiday Inn gave me all their old blankets and, wow. and bedding, and it filled up my whole garage.
Oh, my gosh.
But in the winter, it's been milder this winter, last yes. winter than normal, but the winter in L.A. goes down to 30-something
yes.
degrees. These guys are freezing out
yes.
there. So maybe put a blanket in the back of your car.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a couple extra water bottles.
That's nice.
My daughter, we went to CVS the other day. My daughter came out, and she saw a homeless guy in front of the store wanting money.
Uh-huh.
She went and bought him a sandwich and a drink
right.
and came out and gave him that. Sometimes mm-hmm. the money will just go for drugs.
Exactly.
But, yeah. you know,
right. That's
I'd rather give it to the homeless person than give it to, a lot of times, an agency, because it goes directly to them, mm-hmm. even though maybe they're going to go out and buy drugs. They
sure.
might need those drugs.
Right.
You know, if they don't have those drugs, they might be in big trouble. So,
yeah.
you know.
Withdrawal.
Yeah, yeah. withdrawal. Right. And like I said, with self-medicating.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
The cocaine inhibits the reuptake of dopamine in the synaptic gap.
Mm-hmm.
And so does a lot of these...
Antidepressants,
mm-hmm. exactly. They have the same effect of the dopamine
right.
and the serotonin and the oxytocin in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just masking, you know,
yeah.
what could be prescribed to them legally.
Wow.
And instead, you know, the largest mental institution in the world is L.A. County Jail. It holds over 2,000. They have a whole wing that's the mental institution, the mental part. They hold over 2,000 mentally ill prisoners, and over 6,000 psychotropic drugs are given out in the jail every day.
Unbelievable.
I mean, these people shouldn't be in jail. They should
right.
be in a proper place.
I was going to say, they're not getting treatment.
They're not getting
so
treatment.
Exactly.
They're getting let out, and they're going right back into
sure.
it. It's a revolving door.
Yeah.
You know, these guys need to get out there, and we need to find some kind of housing for them.
Right.
And then get them into treatment, because all the housing in the world isn't going to help them if they don't
mm-hmm.
get treatment.
Sure.
And even the ones that are out there in the street, we need follow-up, you know?
Right.
We need people monitoring them, we
yeah.
know, making sure they do take their drugs.
Sure.
So, you know, it's a huge problem, but it can be licked.
Right.
You know, we just got to put some money into it and, you know, have people that really care.
Sure.
You mentioned about your daughter and going in and buying the sandwich. I've always thought that it was better to do something like that instead of just giving someone money. But I do have to say that there was this place in, I think it's in Santa Barbara, off mm-hmm. the pier. There's a bunch of people that they do like these sand castles, and I imagine that some of them are homeless, and they put
right.
little buckets out. And I have to actually just, it was sweet that the guy said, to be honest, I'm using this for beer.
Wow.
So he's like, he's got the big bucket, and he wants
right.
people to throw the money. Using it for beer.
Right.
Right. I've seen some of those signs.
Yeah.
Let me buy some pot or some
exactly.
alcohol
yeah.
or
yeah.
something.
But what I'm saying is, back to that question of, is it better to give money or is it better to give them something? Because I once was walking out of a restaurant in San Francisco, and there was a huge homeless population in San Francisco. And I was actually a little bit offended myself, because I had this great meal that I wasn't going to finish, really. I was going to probably nibble on it, but I didn't have a refrigerator in my room. And
sure.
probably if I wasn't going to eat it at midnight, you know, when
yeah.
I had, you know, something to munch on, it was going to go to waste. And I offered it to this guy, and he goes, I don't want your leftovers.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, that's a lot of entitlement for
yeah.
somebody. But then I thought, is that my entitlement to believe that this person shouldn't have entitlement? Like, would I really want to eat somebody's leftovers who I didn't know
right.
who they were? And I was thinking, well, he could be thinking I could have germs, or I could have this, or I could have that. But it was a moment.
If he was
like,
hungry enough, he would.
Well, that's what I'm thinking too. And the same thing happened to me when I lived in France. I'll never forget it. I gave this homeless person my sandwich, and he asked me what it was. I think it was tuna fish at the time, and he said, I don't like tuna fish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and I was, like, really taken back.
Right.
It was really interesting.
Enough.
Yeah.
I've had homeless people refuse food before. They say, I want money. You know?
Right, exactly.
And they want money for drugs. Drugs are more important than food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With, if you're addicted, for sure.
Oh,
of course.
The
their body needs it.
From some of these
absolutely.
Drugs are terrible. Yeah. These people can die from withdrawal.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that brings on another whole thing of thievery. I mean, these guys have to get their drug fix every day, so how are they going to get the money?
Sure.
A lot of them have to turn to crime.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to. They should be, you know, taken care of, treated. You know, we have some of these methadone clinics, but they won't put everybody on methadone.
Right.
You know, so a lot of these people have to get their fix, and they have to do anything to get it.
Sure.
And that's why our houses are getting robbed sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Mm. In shelters, do they have mental health clinicians to help out?
Some of them, actually. It's funny. I know, it's not funny, but I know a lady who works at the LA Mission, and last week, in the hallway, there two homeless people got in the argument, and one got stabbed to death right in the shelter.
So it's
gonna be a rough place.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. See, I think a lot of people are terrified to give blankets and things like that because they're scared for their own safety.
I was scared
when
I went down to Skid Row. Which Skid Row, I don't know. It's growing. It seems like every time I go down a street, I'll see tents now on the side of the street, on bridges, you know, numerous tents. It looks like a third world country, America. And this is America.
Yeah.
This is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And 25% of these are women and children. This is horrendous. But
like freeway off-ramps and things, I'll often see people set up a little community of homeless.
It used to be only downtown, and now it's spread out all
over
the place.
Off of Wilshire. There's a whole little group right off of Wilshire Boulevard in the 405.
Yes.
Right, there's one park, and I forget which one it is, but there's tents all over the park.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So it's just unbelievable. But, you know, the rents are so much now.
I mean,
you can't rent a place for less than probably $1,000 a month.
Right.
You know, even in the worst areas, you know, it's just unbelievable. Some people just can't afford this.
There, I swear, when we talk about this, though, I do have this level of, like, I talk to Kelly about this all the time, that my pet peeve on the planet is people with high levels of entitlement. And when people will say, well, you know, I really need to do this. I need to make this move. I need to do this. This is off the subject of homelessness. And somebody will say, well, I don't want to have a roommate. What do you mean you don't want to have a roommate? Who are you to decide that you don't want to have a roommate? You know, you're 20-something-year-old. Your parents have been supporting you.
Right.
They're allowing you. You have a job. You need to move out. They're trying to help you. And I don't want a roommate. What? I think, like, put
so you
yourself
feel like
in
people
perspective
are yeah,
here.
Too
there
picky.
Are people who don't have a home, and you're complaining about the fact that your parents want you to have a roommate.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Of course. Of course.
So this is the one thing that just irritates the crap out of me.
There's a lot of kids that feel that way, I'll tell
especially
you.
The new generation. It's very tough. Yeah.
The millennial entitlement factor.
Exactly.
It's going to be a movie in that one for sure.
That's very true.
So what was your most frightening experience that you had in working, and then also your most heartfelt experience?
The most frightening, well, every day when I was down in Skid Row giving up blankets or doing the film, I'd have somebody yelling at me, oh, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be attacked down there very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it is scary. And I would be scared to live down there. And I'm a 6 foot, you know, tall former lifeguard. And I would be scared, you know.
Yeah.
So there's so much violence. Like I said, there was a guy killed at the LA Mission just the other day. So it is scary. But the most heartwarming, I think, this gentleman, Terrell Ferguson, and I were down there shooting. He was one of the producers on the movie. We were shooting this movie, the documentary, and we found this family of, I think it was three kids and a wife and a husband, and they had a car. They're living in their car, but they had no battery. The battery was dead. So actually, T put in his hand in his pocket and bought them battery. Their car would have been towed away in a few days, and they'd have no place to sleep. But I think the smiles on their faces when they got... We actually took them to Burger King afterwards, and the kids, they got those little crowns.
Crowns, yeah.
They thought that was like going to Disneyland for a lot of us.
Wow.
But,
that's so sweet.
Yeah, I think seeing the smiles on their faces, you know, every day at BTAC, I felt like Santa Claus when I was working at the Burbank Temporary Aid Center, because we helped so many people. It was it's remarkable. Even in Burbank, which is a really upscale community, there's a huge amount of homeless people. There's one lady. I live right across the street from Olive Park, and there's this lady. She must be about 60 years old, and she sleeps on the tennis court. They have like one of those practice tennis courts. She sleeps in the cement every night in the tennis court.
Oh, wow. Now, are the police really hostile toward the homeless, or are they more gentle these days? Because it used to be that they were pretty...
Yeah.
Gentle. I I've found that it's getting a little bit better, but they're not trained properly to deal with mentally ill. They don't understand the mentally ill. There was that kid not too long ago that was killed by the police that was mentally ill, and the father sued, and I don't remember what happened with the suit, but they don't understand. They should have to take, you know, abnormal psychology and you know, have some kind of training in how to deal with these people, because these people aren't, you know, the normal people they deal with.
Right. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah, 100%.
Wow. I have seen out where I live in Thousand Oaks that sometimes there's very few homeless there, but when there are, the police are pretty gentle with
them.
They seem to know who they are, and so they just sort of like corral them over someplace else.
Sure.
But I was also thinking about, there was a guy when I used to live in Encino, and there was a Trader Joe's, and there was a guy who was, I think he was a vet, because he was, well, I'm just making assumptions here. I don't know for sure. I didn't talk to him for that long, but he was in a wheelchair, and he would sit in front of the Trader Joe's every day, and I would say, you know, you're a smart guy. You seem like someone who could work or do something. He goes, no, it's simply much easier here to sit and collect my about $35 to $40 a day so I can get a little motel room every night, and I get a few scraps from people to eat. So he actually had adapted his life expectation to that. That was his day's work, sitting in front of the Trader Joe's.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it'd be very hard for a lot of these homeless to go to work. They've been routined in this so long, you know, to go back to work and have to start paying bills and stuff. You know,
sure.
A lot of them are, you know, just they're not able to do that. So.
I mean, I had total compassion for him. I completely understood it. I just thought, these are just life lessons that we don't always learn until you actually try to have a conversation with somebody and understand where their mentality is.
Sure.
I assume that there'd be a lot of fear. But also what you're saying is, I think, so volunteering, like blankets, things like that. We could also work at missions. We could serve food.
A lot of volunteers are needed at these places. That's for darn sure. I'll tell you a little story. I came across this one homeless gentleman who's probably in his 60s, and he was a Navy veteran, he told me, of 20-something years. And he got a pension from the Navy, but he sent his pension to this disabled daughter. And became homeless because he gave all his money for her upkeep.
Wow.
And he was beaten almost really badly by the police. And he was a veteran. And he was complaining about it, actually, in the documentary, how they have beaten him up so many times. So, I don't know.
Mm. Well, there has to be a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder in the homeless population, I would imagine. Not just from being homeless, but PTSD, then not being able to function,
of course,
becoming homeless, and then it being exacerbated because of the fear factor of having to live around people who you can't really trust.
Well, that was something that I was really interested in. How many people become mentally ill because of homelessness? I ran across this one gentleman who was about 2 years before was a senior engineer at Northrop Grumman, and he lost his job, he lost his house, his wife divorced him, and I found him lying in a pool of urine and you know, drinking and totally messed up. His cognition was out the window, and it was all from, you know, he was a smart guy. He was a senior engineer at one time, and now he's on the street and living in his own urine. It's just terrible.
Unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
This is really eye-opening, you know, in a lot of ways. Wow.
Have you ever yourself, Kelly, had anybody close to you in your world, not your dad's world, but where
be
someone
homeless?
Really ended up that down and out?
Thank God, no. I feel like you have somebody.
No, I don't, actually.
But
I have a lot of people who I want them to really recognize how fortunate they are that people have rescued them, because they would be one step away from homeless if it weren't for the generosity of other people and the kindness of, you know, supporting them, helping them, letting them couch surf. There are also things that people can do to at least try to avoid that step, which are things like you could actually work. You could maybe help to take care of somebody's home. You could offer to do things for people to, you know, get temporary stay somewhere while you get back on your feet.
Oh, sure.
Instead of, you know, maybe we could talk some more when we get back from our break about some resources that are available for people and organizations and things like that. So now a word from Vantage.
Do you swear off drugs or alcohol in the morning only to succumb to the thought later in the day? According to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's 2012 survey on drug use and health, it was shown that roughly 8.4 million adults in the U.S. suffered from addiction and mental health-related disorders. Vantage Point Recovery, specializing in intensive treatment for those struggling with addiction and mental health-related disorders, has a place for you. Located in Thousand Oaks, California, call us today at 888-668-5959 to see how our program may be a fit for you or a loved one.
Thank you and welcome back. Okay, so what are some resources that people, anybody who's maybe at that edge where, mm-hmm. you know, their own personal financial resources are dwindling fast, what are some steps that people could take?
Well, most communities have some sort of aid center. The Burbank Temporary Aid Center, where I was at, we gave away over $1 million worth of food every year.
Wow.
And we get it donated from places like Trader Joe's. And,
oh, that's great.
It's good food, too.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't just, you know, government cheese or something.
Yeah.
And most communities have it. Glendale has Loaves and Fishes. There's LAMP down in Skid Row. There's the LA Mission.
Oh, good.
There's National Coalition for the Homeless. So there's a lot of different organizations trying to help the homeless out there.
That's nice.
There's also food stamps that
yes.
people can apply for, right? And there's, I guess people can get on Medi-Cal also.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the Obamacare, there's more resources available for health insurance, at least. Right.
One thing about food stamps, though, a felon, if you be convicted of a felony, you can't get food stamps.
Oh, really?
That's
so
true.
A lot of these homeless gentlemen yeah. that get out of the prisons, they can't get food stamps.
Oh.
And, you know, the repetitive...
Even if they've done their time?
Even if they've done their time.
Right?
The repetitive rate in prisoners is something like 85 or more percent. Most of these guys go right back in there. Not because they want to go back in the crime, because they have no choice. They have
exactly.
nowhere to live.
Nowhere to live.
They're
yeah.
out there homeless. They get out of jail and no one wants to give them a job. They're convicts.
Sure.
You know, ex-convicts.
It's safer in a way, yeah.
You know, so it's very hard for these guys, even though some of them really want to, you know, improve their lives and get
sure.
jobs. And there's very little training in prison, so you
yes.
get out there, you have no job skills except for maybe dealing drugs.
Right.
You know, so what do? You go back to dealing drugs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I thought that movie, Trading Places, was a really fascinating,
yes.
You know, obviously very Hollywoodized and
right.
glamorized, but with
Eddie
Nolte and Eddie Murphy, and then
yeah.
they really like, well, what would you do if you were ever put in that position? You have no idea. It's so easy to sit on the sidelines and judge people and
mm-hmm.
point the finger at them. And like you were saying earlier, people going, that's a bum. What do we care about
right.
them? That kind
that
of thing.
Dan Aykroyd character, who is the millionaire and they became homeless, everybody treated him totally different.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the thing is that there's a sociologist called Cooley that had a theory called looking glass theory, saying that you become what people perceive you to be. So if people perceive you to be a low-life
mm-hmm.
bum, you start thinking of yourself as a low-life
sure.
bum, and that's where you become.
Unbelievable.
I think I experienced that this weekend a little bit.
That's so funny.
I was perceived as being the problem, and guess what? I behaved as the problem.
Right.
Okay, I'm just making a little bit of light because this is such a heavy
topic,
subject, and sometimes
yeah.
it's very hard to embrace this and really to fully understand the magnitude. Do you have any information about this across other countries also? Is homelessness treated differently in different subcultures or countries?
Well, I've been to 25 countries.
Okay.
And I have seen very little homelessness compared to LA.
Really?
Maybe because I look for it here.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But I was all over Scandinavia. I
oh,
walked all over Copenhagen. I didn't
yeah.
see one homeless person on the street there.
Sure.
Same
but healthcare is free.
In Sweden and Norway.
Sure.
It's totally different, so I don't know.
Well, healthcare is free there.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. They treat the people really well. Maternity leave, I think they give them 2 years or some ridiculous. I mean, so it's. I mean, taxes
generous.
Are higher.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, taxes are
taxes
higher.
Taxes are
but,
higher.
Do
yeah.
you know, we
yeah.
have the largest prison population of any country in the world.
Oh my gosh!
Do you know our prison population is equal to, I think it was the city of Houston. There's over 2 million people in prison, and 60% of there for drug offenses, which is totally ridiculous. And the unproportionate amount of blacks
right.
is really unbelievable. There's 60% population of blacks in some prison states,
mm-hmm.
and only 12% of the population in that state is black.
Mm.
So this is so unproportional. And
yeah.
for the same crimes, you know, they get, you know, there's a big gap in sociology. I read this story about saints and sinners. And people who have money, kids that go out, they get in trouble even
mm-hmm.
more than sometimes the poor kids, but they get away with it.
Yes.
The poor kids end up going to jail. So, you know, it's is something too. Having money in this country, you can get away with a lot more, and being perceived as from a good family, they treat you differently. You know,
true. I was so upset about that, the Stanford rape, and how people. I mean, the headline was like, you know, like Stanford swimmer record times, and they like even told his times. It's like it didn't matter about the rape. It was like, here's his amazing, you know, athleticism, and yeah.
So therefore, just, the rape doesn't count.
It's not as bad because here's this amazing athlete. You know, it was. Unbelievable. Yeah.
We do.
There's two justice systems in this country, to tell the truth.
It's what?
Two justice systems, one for the rich and one for the poor, and they are not at all alike.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So what next? What's your next project?
I'm finishing up a book.
Oh, cool.
A novel.
Can you tell us about it?
It's basically a true story, but I fictionalized a lot of it. It's about an anthropologist who's on his way to South America to live with the Cofan Indians. And he has a hypothesis saying that people, native cultures that use shamanism and psychedelic drugs have less mental illness.
Oh,
and,
really?
In the form of neuroses. Now, I know neuroses is not listed as a mental illness in the DSM-4, but it is mentioned, and I think there's something to that. So I think, you know... these shamans, actually, there's a lot. I don't know if you know Cary Grant, psychiatrist, gave him LSD, and there's a lot of psychotherapy done with LSD and different drugs. And post-traumatic stress, actually, they found is had great improvement for these guys to go down and use the Yahe, these ex-veterans. I don't know if you've read anything about that. Also cancer people. Well, the book is about this anthropologist going down to South America to do this, and he's flashing back through his college years in the 1960s, and each chapter is about something. One chapter is about sex, one chapter is about war, one chapter is about drugs, et cetera, et cetera. And it's sort of a scientific book that's put into sort of a Hunter Thompson format. So hopefully, I've been working on it for too long, 8 years, but hopefully it's going to be ready this year. It's finished. I just have to, the editing, I'm not an editor, and I'm doing it myself, so it's very difficult.
That's amazing. Oh,
Do you have a publisher already?
No.
You're going to self-publish?
I don't know what I'll do.
You don't know
I
got to
finish it first.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, you're almost there. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible. So, well, we have a few minutes left. Do you have anything else kind of that you want to say about homeless or how people can help or anything?
Yeah, I think we all should treat homelessness in a different light. I don't think we should look at these people as bums. I think we should look at them as mentally ill, a lot of them. I mean, the children, we've got to do something about these children, homelessness, because they're brought up to be mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Like one-third of the kids that are homeless have mental problems, you know. It's really, really horrific. I'm a father of four kids, and I don't like to see this in America. This is America. I mean, how can we let, you know, on any given night in America, that there's, I forget the exact figure, but thousands of homeless children. It's just, it's horrendous. This is America. And we think of America as being a rich and wonderful country that helps everybody. You know, we go to other countries and help them. And what are we doing for our kids here? And our homeless population, our mentally ill. I mean, it's unbelievable. 57% of homeless kids spend at least one day every month without food. You know, 50% report intense conflicts of physical harm. 20,000 kids every year, homeless kids every year, are forced into prostitution. I mean, and 50% of adolescents leaving foster care end up homeless within 6 months.
Wow.
We've got to do something about this. This is not permittable in our country, you know, at least not in my estimation.
Exactly.
You know, this is terrible.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so to not be too down after the end of this show, I think there are things that we can do. Sometimes it's one little step at a time. So when you're driving out of that McDonald's and you see somebody with a sign that says, please help, please do something, you know, think for a minute, you know, maybe you don't need that extra bag of French fries for yourself, you know, maybe there's some little bit that you can give, and given the ways that you're able to do.
And I think this has been super informative.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've learned so much. So hopefully our listeners have too, and maybe have a different light about it, you know, and
Absolutely.
Can look at things differently.
Very eye-opening. Thank you so much, Kevin McKenna, for being our guest today.
Thank you so much.
And if you want to get in touch with us, please email us at docandtherapist@gmail.com. Please like us on Twitter at DocTherapist1. And also, next week's guest is somebody that you bumped into.
Yes, she's fascinating. Her name is Karin Muller. She's a war journalist, and she has lived in many countries trying to basically promote peace and just fascinating, really wonderful gal. So I'm super excited about that.
Did you meet her like at a farmer's market?
No,
or something?
I met her at a special needs event. Ah. So she was just volunteering. So nice. Here's this woman who's constantly traveling, you know, reporting, and then on her days off, she volunteers. I mean, it's beautiful.
That is beautiful. Love. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for inviting her because I look forward to meeting her. All right, you all have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.